2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined on the phone today by the incomparable Ben Badler. Ben did the Philly system for us again this year. He's done it for a few years. Ben, the Phillies in the past have had some really, really highly rated farm systems. We've seen some of that talent come up to the majors. Aaron Nola, Reese Hoskins, Scott Kingery, and J.P. Crawford both had their rookie years last year, although obviously neither was particularly successful. When you look at the Phillies as a whole, where they are at the major league level and where they are now with their farm system, just how do you kind of see them? Because they disappointed a little bit this last year. Crawford's been traded. There's talent in the system, but it's more shallow than it was before. Is this a team that can really contend in the NL East with the Braves and now the Mets with what they have, or are they going to have to make a move?
Well, there's some pretty big moves that that they could potentially make this offseason. So it's kind of like hard to peg a win total for the Phillies in 2019 just yet, depending on whether obviously Machado or Harper end up in Philadelphia. Obviously, that's going to swing things pretty significantly. But even if they don't get one of those two players, I still think this is a playoff caliber team. They made some trades to upgrade. They added Robertson. The back of that bullpen is going to be really good, I think, with him and Dominguez and a whole bunch of other guys in there that I think are going to be an upgrade from what they had last year, and in an area or two where I think they could get some help from the farm with some guys like Edgar Garcia or Kyle Doe is a sleeper for them. But I do think this is a team that certainly should be contending. They've had so many years being, and I guess just below 500 now and missing the playoffs. This is what they've been rebuilding for. I think you can look for, or at least hope for, potential breakout type years from, somebody like Nick Williams or Scott Kingery could take a step forward. Alfaro, Michael Franco is still young and in his mid-20s. I mean, these are all guys who I think could take big steps forward for them and, even more so than help from the farm system, where I do think they have pitching prospects who are going to help them, not so much on the position player side. I don't think they have a ton of help coming there. That's going to come more from either free agent signings or internally those younger graduated prospects stepping up and taking that next step forward. But whether it's from an Eniel De Los Santos or Ranger Suarez, potentially Sixto Sanchez, I wouldn't rule out him helping this year, or possibly even Medina would be kind of an aggressive timeline for those guys. But I do think this is a team that should be able to contend for the playoffs this year.
One of the things that was the biggest fault to the Phillies, and it was very, very visible, was they overestimated how interchangeable a lot of their players were defensively, and as a result, they were horrendous defensively. For me, one of the best moves in the offseason, period, for any team, was the trade they made with the Mariners. A, you get Gene Segura, who is the only shortstop in baseball to hit 300 with double-digit home runs each of the last 3 years. For my money, he's one of the most talented shortstops in baseball and one of the most underrated players in baseball, period. But by doing that, they also move Carlos Santana, bring Reese Hoskins over to first base. So all of a sudden, you've significantly upgraded your outfield defense just because Reese Hoskins is no longer out there. You let him play his natural position at first base. And frankly, shortstop was a mess. We saw Scott Kingery really should not have been playing there. It was foolish the Phillies to even try, just to be frank. And that came out during the season. Some of the pitchers flat out said it, that he was not making plays he had to make. J.P. Crawford was startlingly unreliable there. All of a sudden now you have a real shortstop. Your outfield defense gets a lot better. Hoskins being at first base. You mentioned all these pitching prospects, and obviously the stuff and what they have is important, but I do feel like by improving their defense, the Phillies not only have helped, the big league product in a, just on its own, but they've also made it, easier for these pitchers to come up and have success, whether that's De Los Santos, whether that's Sixto Sanchez. We saw a lot of guys get their first taste last year. They still have some young arms and guys who are inconsistent like Vince Velasquez and Zach Eflin. I do feel like the fact that they've just maneuvered their defense around is going to benefit their pitchers, the ones currently at the big league level and the ones still to come.
Yeah, I think anytime you take Rhys Hoskins out of left field where he can't really play and Scott Kingery away from shortstop where he can't really play, like you said, that's going to help them. The team just seems like it's gonna fit a lot better defensively than it was last year where they were trying to mix and match guys at positions they really aren't suited for.
Square pegs and round holes doesn't work out too well. I do want to get to some of these young pitchers. Obviously, you mentioned Sixto Sanchez is the big guy. If you look at the Phillies' top 10 available online at Baseball America, 7 of the top 10 are pitchers. Sixto's been a premium prospect for a little while. He did not pitch a whole lot last year with injury, and it was not a completely lost year, but at least from the outside looking in, it seemed mostly lost, through 46 and two-thirds innings. They were good innings when he was out there, but still not a huge sample size. What's the overall status of Sixto Sanchez as we sit here right now on, January 4th, 2019?
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies insist that he's healthy. He's ready to go in spring training. I don't think they're, I don't think they're wrong. At the same time, there's still added injury risk, added durability risk than we're talking now compared to when we were talking a year ago going into the 2018 season. He had an elbow injury, right elbow inflammation, and they thought he was going to come back by the end of the year, and then he didn't. And then they thought he was going to come back and pitch in the Arizona Fall League, and he didn't come back and pitch there either. So, they say he's healthy now. I guess, we'll see. I mean, we've never really seen him throw more than, 100 or so, 95 innings in 2017. That was his career high.
Yep.
And, granted, he's still, he just turned 20 years old last summer, so it's not like he's, 23, 24, like an Alex Reyes, for example, who hasn't shown the ability to, to handle that starter's workload or has a lot more questions with marks, at least there. Sanchez has never had to, he's never been cut on. He's never had an operation, anything like that. But it's definitely still a concern. But I think that if he goes out, he can go out this year easily and put a lot of those, put a lot of those, certainly at least ease a lot of those concerns. Because when he is healthy, this is, after Forrest, I think you can make a case that after Forrest Whitley, he might be the best pitching prospect in baseball. And if it's not Sixto, he's certainly in that conversation of guys right after Forrest Whitley. It's an electric fastball. He can miss bats with the changeup. That's a plus pitch for him at times. I think the slider, I think that's going to be a key pitch for him. He was making some progress with that pitch before he got injured, but only making 8 starts, it wasn't a lot of time for him to really, really show that. And it's a guy who, a lot of times we're talking about these, hard throwers who, have a lot of trouble finding the strike zone. Obviously, that's not an issue for Sixto Sanchez. This guy is a really, really, really advanced strike thrower. So I think just health is really the key for him. And there's some kind of guesswork that we're doing on that in terms of his durability. But really, I think that's the most important thing for him is just to stay healthy, because I don't think there are too many questions on him when it comes to either the stuff or the ability to locate that stuff in the zone.
Yeah, there's no question when he's on the mound, it's pretty special. It's just, as you mentioned, staying on the mound is not something he has a long track record of doing. I'll be curious to see how many innings he really throws this year. You mentioned guys get hurt, especially pitchers, we know that. But when you start missing multiple target dates for recovery, you mentioned end of the year, he's supposed to be back, he wasn't. Oh, he's going to pitch in the Arizona Fall League. Well, he has another setback with his elbow. Always a little bit concerning. He is a smaller guy, and while size does not always correlate to injury, because at this point, everyone is getting hurt if they're pitching, At the same time, is there a sense that that is going to hamper his durability long term? And do the Phillies think it's related?
No, I don't think so. I think, like you said, it's more about the pitching, the fact that he's being, you know, the fact that he's pitching more than the fact that he's six. I mean, he's a pretty sturdy dude. He's probably, you know, 2'10", 6 foot, 2'10", something like that. He's a pretty strong guy. It's just, you know, we do see a lot of really, really hard throwers who are going down with injuries. We see a lot of guys who don't throw that hard, too, who are going down with elbow injuries. So I think, and he's a, you know, a pretty easy delivery too that he throws from. So it's just one of those things, I think, where it's the fact that he's a pitcher more than anything else, and a pitcher who already now has a track record of having an elbow injury that kind of elevates that risk for him.
Moving on beyond Sixto Sanchez, who was the clear number one in terms of, you know, where the Phillies system was going to rank out. Alec Bohm was their first round pick this year, number three overall, Wichita State, big power hitting third baseman. Did not have, you know, the strongest debut. Normally you'd say, hey, it's a long season, it's a college guy, you know, it happens. But given the Phillies' fairly rough track record of drafting hitters in most recent drafts, Cornelius Randolph, Mickey Moniak. You know, Adam Haseley's done well for himself, but I don't know if anyone looks at him and says, yeah, that guy should have been, you know, taken where he was in the top 10. Just to be frank, the Phillies' track record of drafting hitters in the first round is not great. Any concerns there that something was missed with Alec Bohm in your discussions with evaluators, or are they just chalking it up to he'll be fine, it's just been a long season?
Yeah, I think probably more the latter with him. I just got to take every player on an individual basis, and with Bohm, I think he's different than, you know, Randolph or Moniak, a couple of high school guys, and those were two really prominent high school guys who had, you know, teams have built fairly extensive histories on them, but history relative to a you know, an 18-year-old high school player playing against, you know, competition of other teenage high school players. Whereas with Alec Bohm, we have a pretty significant track record of him hitting against you know, much more advanced college level pitching, doing it with wood bats in the Cape Cod League. Everything is still there, you know. Bat speed, leverage, power. You know, he's a big guy. There's going to be some length to the swing, and then a lot of strike zone to cover. But he has a pretty good understanding of the strike zone. I think for him, it was really more just still, you know, kind of a. It wasn't like he was up there striking out 30% of the time or anything like that. You know, if that was happening, that'd be a little bit more of a red flag for me. But for him, I just think it was just not such a great initial pro debut for him, but I expect he's not going to have any real issues when he goes out next year to, you know, probably to high class A, probably to Clearwater, the same path they had Haseley on. I don't expect him to have any major struggles there.
In the course of this process, was there ever any question that Alec Bohm was the number two prospect in this system, or was there a debate?
Yeah, it I think actually it was pretty close between him and Luis Garcia, because I think he made the case that Garcia may be a better prospect now. I think he probably has more upside too, because Luis Garcia is really, really good. He is a shortstop who can make all the flashy plays at shortstop, really good instincts, just like a nose for the ball at shortstop, gets good jumps off the bat. He's not like a burner type of a runner, but he's got a really quick first step, reading balls off the bat, good range, plus arm, very fluid with good body control in the field. And a lot of times, you know, you've probably written the same kind of report on, you know, 17 or 18 year old Gulf Coast League shortstops, where they can you know, make the acrobatic plays but don't make a lot of great decisions in the field, so they have to cut down on mistakes. But Garcia is interesting because he can make all the really high value type plays to save a lot of runs, but also doesn't. He's also very consistent fundamentally on the routine plays. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes that you see a lot of young shortstops make. So defensively, you were talking about now he's 18 years old, turned 18 after the season, a guy who has a potential plus, if not better, defensive shortstop. And then also he led the GCL in hitting and was number three in on-base percentage while making his pro debut, skipping over the Dominican Summer League as a 17-year-old. Really good bat control. I think there was more of a split camp on his bat as an amateur in terms of how much impact he was going to get. I don't think he's going to be a big power hitter by any means, but the bat control, the ability to make contact, put the ball in play, use the whole field from both sides of the plate, and have a pretty good approach too of the pretty solid feel for the strike zone. It was really impressive. So if you have a guy who can hit at the top of the lineup and play that kind of defense, that's a really, really exciting player. The difference with him and Alec Boehm is that Boehm has a much lengthier track record of him having done it for a longer period of time than Garcia, and he's closer to the big leagues than Garcia. But when we're talking, I don't even want to say this time next year, we might be talking mid-season. I could absolutely see Garcia being flipped ahead of Boehm, and at some point, I mean, Garcia is the type of talent where he could end up being the number one prospect in this system before he gets to the big leagues.
With Garcia, you mentioned just how impressive he was, both in terms of his ability to be flashy and play mature baseball. He was 17 the entire season in the Gulf Coast League. This was a high school junior going out and showing up pretty well against professionals who were 2-3 years older than him. You mentioned that potentially, top of the order guy, shortstop. He's still a baby, again, just turned 18. He'll be 18 all of next season. But given that he's so advanced and his ability to play, with older competition and, like you said, has a mature approach, is able to make, smart plays at short, not just flashy plays, how quick do you think he can move?
That's a good question. I think he, I wouldn't rule him out being in the big leagues by the time, say, he's 21 or so. It's tough. I think that jump from, I expect that he's going to go to low A next year in the South Atlantic League. That's a big jump. We've seen guys have success before in the Gulf Coast League and then hit a wall when they make that jump to full season ball. No, I don't expect that to happen for Garcia, but that kind of is what just really the main reason why he's three right now and Alec Boehm is still ahead of him at number two is just Boehm is more of an advanced player right now. There's just a little bit more risk and a little bit more uncertainty, I would say, with Garcia than there is with Boehm. But if he goes out and shows he can handle the bat really well against South Atlantic League pitchers next year, I think he's got a chance to move pretty quickly through that organization. But again, he's like you said, he's still going to be 18 years old all of 2019. He's still at least a few years away.
Sixto was the clear number one in a tier of his own. Boehm and Garcia, numbers two and three, kind of neck and neck. You go into Adonis Medina and Adam Haseley, who have had time in the top 100 before. Both have had some success. Jojo Romero and Eniel De Los Santos at 6 and 7 also spent time in the 100. How big of a drop-off, was it from that top three into this middle group? Or are these guys still top 100 caliber in your mind at their best?
I think Medina has a very strong case to be in the top 100. Haseley, I think that's kind of where you're just going to see the top 100 guys drop off. I think you could go, down to number eight right now at Spencer Howard, and look at guys who, all right, these guys have a you know, there's a path where they could be, you know, De Los Santos will probably graduate pretty quickly. But I think you look at Spencer Howard, Jojo Romero, and Adam Haseley, depending on, again, how he does this year. Those are all guys who I could see jumping into that top 100 mix in the future. I mean, the way Howard looked in the second half and the way he finished the season, usually we're sitting here talking, oh, all right, well, this guy got kind of, you know, ground down in August, and after his first full season in pro ball, he got tired on the stretch. With Howard, it was like the opposite. Like, his stuff just kept getting there was a point early in the season where it was down, and then it got better and better. And then in August, it was at its best, or maybe even, you know, September in that playoff start, he was hitting 100 and just absolutely dominating hitters. He probably has, you know, after Sixto, you know, his upside is probably comparable to Medina's. So I think he's a guy who I think could take potentially a big leap forward next year and be in that top 100 mix. But I think Medina has a strong case to be in there this year with the stuff and the overall profile that he has.
Yeah, in terms of the future for a lot of these arms, Medina, De Los Santos, Romero, do you see them at the end of the day contributing to the Phillies more as starters or relievers? Because De Los Santos and Medina, you hear both sides of it.
Yeah, I think Medina should be a starter. He has all the pitches to be a starter. He's got to lock down his commands and some of the sequencing in terms of the, you know, the way that he uses his pitch. But you know, he throws strikes. He's athletic. I think the command will come in times. The guy, you know, pitched all year last year as a 21-year-old, and you know, it's a plus fastball. It's a plus slider. The changeup at times is plus two. So I think all the pitches are there for him to really be a starter. With Romero, you know, I think Romero definitely for me projects as a starter. There's not like one. He has a whole bunch of pitches. In fact, I think that was something of an issue for him last year, where he was just trying to throw everything at hitters instead of pitching off of some of his strengths. But I do see him as a solid, you know, number four type starter with a chance for more upside there. De Los Santos is probably the one guy where I do have more concerns on him starting. Not so much because of his durability. I think he's actually extremely durable. He's probably one of the more durable pitching prospects in the minors. It's more just about that breaking ball. He really doesn't have that. That pitch is still a below average pitch for him. He's a fastball changeup guy, and it's not a, you know, it's not like a Chris Paddock type of changeup. You know, it's not this, you know, a plus-plus, a really dominant type of pitch for him. So I think there's more bullpen risk with him. And, you know, Howard is, I think, you know, I think Howard has the stuff to start. If not, he could definitely be a dominant back-end bullpen type of arm. But I absolutely, you know, that's not something I would think about for him for at least another couple of years, with him still being in A-ball. But those other guys, other than, I think De Los Santos has a lot of reliever risk just because of the pitch profile with him. But otherwise, I think those guys all should be able to contribute as starters for the Phillies.
The Phillies have been really, really prominent in terms of the amateur scouting in California in recent years. You talked about Spencer Howard. He's a Cal Poly San Luis Obispo guy. They obviously went to La Costa Canyon High School down in San Diego to get Mickey Moniak number one overall. They drafted Colton Eastman and Connor Siebold out of Cal State Fullerton. You mentioned this guy earlier, Kyle Doey, another guy that they got out of Southern California, Cal Poly Pomona, left-hander. When I had Southern California draft coverage, I remember writing about him. Left-hander with a power arm, but just the control was a mess. He had a really, really poor season pitching for D2 Cal Poly Pomona. But you've got him ranked this year. Obviously not in the top 10, but he's going to be in the handbook. You alluded to him a little earlier this year. What about him really popped this year? Because you mentioned that there's real stuff there from the left side. He could be one of those, you know, pitchers who's kind of popping up a little late.
Yeah, the Phillies have done a nice job with, you know, you talked about some of the, you know, notable misses or guys who are starting to look like misses at the top of their drafts, but they've done a really good job, especially with some of their later round picks. And Kyle Doe is a good example of that. Yeah, you mentioned his control troubles in college, and it's, you know, not like, you know, it certainly it extended into his pro debut. He's walking a batter per inning. It's didn't look like this is a guy we're going to be fast tracking by any means. And then he finishes the year in Double A because he, you saw him get his legs more into his delivery. And he started to get his fastball, see some more power with that. I think the Phillies do a really good job of that, of getting pitchers just to synchronize their deliveries better, their upper half and their lower half, really getting their, using their big muscles and their legs to get more into their deliveries and squeak out some extra velocity. And he was able to make some mechanical adjustments, throw more strikes, and really throw that fastball up in the zone for swing and miss. Plus slider too, that can really be a lefty with that slider on lefties is really nasty. And then the changeup too, like, you know, as a it's almost like a starter's pitch mix, but he is a reliever. I think you could see him maybe being like a multi-inning reliever at the next level, because he does have the ability to get both lefties and righties out with that pitch mix. But a guy who struck out 41% of batters. And if we were talking, you know, 2 years ago or even had this conversation a year ago, I don't think either of us would have brought up Kyle Doe as a guy we would expect to be, fast-tracked given his control problems as a 16th round pick. But, he finished the year in Double A. He did struggle a little with his control when he got there, but I think that's probably just a temporary kind of an aberration for him compared to the rest of his year and what to expect going forward. He's definitely one of my favorite sleepers in the system. Again, it's a reliever, so it's not a super high upside, but a really, really nice pick for them out of the 16th round.
No question. If you can get a potential big leaguer in that later round, you've done something right. I want to circle back. We mentioned Mickey Moniak briefly, number one overall pick 2 years ago. Had a rough season in his pro debut with Lakewood, but when I saw him, I saw him when he was an amateur, and I saw him at Lakewood. There's some guys who are drafted high, and then you see them, and pretty clearly it's like, yeah, they messed up. He's not that good. Moniak, when I saw him, you still saw the sweet left-handed swing. You saw the ability to drive balls gap to gap. You saw the ability to go get some balls in center field. So I remember when I came away from seeing him in Lakewood, I actually came away a lot more encouraged than I think the raw numbers might have insinuated. Moved up to the Florida State League this year. Was not the greatest season by any stretch when you look at the total package, but he finished pretty strong, and this is someone who is pretty young for his draft class. He finished out, again, pretty strong in the Florida State League, which is not easy to do. Where is he right now, just in terms of how the Phillies see him internally and how evaluators out of house saw him as well?
He's just outside the top 10, and it kind of would be hard to make a strong case to have him be in the top 10. Cause I think, if I had to project what I expect him to be as a big leaguer, do I think he's going to be, an everyday regular in center field at a big league level? Probably not, but I do think he still has the potential to do that. I mean, you mentioned his second half, and the first half was rough. It was very similar to what he did the year before. It was really not looking good. But then if you look from July on, he hit 297, 347, 470, in his last 53 games. That's pretty good. So there's some glimmer of hope there. Like you said, the swing is still there. It's still at this very smooth, sound swing from the left side. I think the some of the pitch recognition and the hitting approach in terms of the selectivity at the plate is not as advanced as what a lot of scouts thought when he was an amateur. And I think the defense is not as good as what the Phillies thought he was going to be when they drafted him. I think they thought he was, you know, potential, you know, Gold Glove type of defender in center field. Now it's that doesn't seem like it's the case with him. So I think there's a, you know, kind of a safer bet is maybe a fourth outfielder, but again, I think there's even risk for him to get to that kind of role. I think if you're really looking for signs of hope, you're really betting on what he showed in the second half of the year, and I, you know, I think that certainly counts, but there's definitely a lot more risk in Mickey Moniak than certainly a lot of people, including myself. I like the pick when they took him number one overall. There's a lot more risk in his game than what was thought a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I just go back to, you know, we talked about certain guys you see, and it's pretty clear right away that a mistake was made. When I saw Cornelius Randolph, it did not take long to realize, yeah, this guy's just not very good. They messed that up. Jalen Ortiz is someone else that, to be just perfectly frank, was maybe the worst guy I saw last year of guys who was, you know, supposed to be a guy. I never got that sense with Mickey Moniak. Again, numbers weren't great, but you mentioned the swing is still there. That there's still some things there, and we see that, you know, even though he's outside the top 10, when you get your prospect handbooks, you'll see, you know, there's still a respectable ranking there for him while the other guys have kind of dropped off the table. Ben, just to wrap up real quick, you know, we hit on Kyle Doey. Is there anyone else in the system that over the course of your reporting, you know, you kind of got to the sense that this is someone who could really pop and maybe isn't getting a lot of love right now, but by this time next year he might be on some radars?
Yeah, there's a couple guys. Again, I mentioned some of their late-round picks. One guy I really like as a sleeper for them is Logan Ohapi. And you mentioned the Phillies taking guys out of SoCal. I mean, also been hitting the Long Island really, really, really hard. And Logan Ohapi was 23rd round pick for them this year, and he got to the Gulf Coast League, and he was really interesting there. Hit well, plus arm, good receiver behind the plate too. Not like a big masher type of power hitter, but guy who's got a pretty good idea for hitting. Again, it's, you know, Gulf Coast League, so want to see how it plays at a higher level, at least when he gets to Lakewood in the South Atlantic League. But that to me was a really interesting pick for them. I could see him potentially even jumping into their top 10 next year if he has a big breakout there. And then another guy who's a late round pick, another left-handed pitcher, Zach Warren, 6'5", lefty out of Tennessee. Another guy who really struggled in college, and then he goes out and he just looked totally different, like struck out more than 40% of the batters he faced when he's coming out of that Lakewood bullpen. Again, 6'5", velocity went up. Another guy that the Phillies kind of juiced a little extra velo out of, up to, you know, 93 to 96 or so. I had some trouble keeping all those, you know, 6'5", had trouble keeping his delivery together, but the Phillies did a much better job helping him with that this year, and you saw better control. The curveball is a power curveball that can miss bats, so not, you know, not the upside, obviously, of a starter or an everyday player, but another really interesting guy for the Phillies in the later rounds.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Zach Warren, because I saw him at Lakewood this year. Had no idea who he was. I had to see this huge left-hander come out of the bullpen, and it was one of the more impressive bullpen relief appearances I saw across the minors this year. 96, 95, 96, and with a lot of extension. I mean, a huge guy on the mound. It was getting on hitters real fast. I watched him both behind the plate and from the side. You want to talk about a big league arm, and not just in that he throws hard. It was everything about him. It was the delivery. It was the way his pitches moved. It was, you know, he was able to stay on line to the plate. These guys couldn't touch him. I definitely would like to see him against, you know, better hitters, high double A, but that was absolutely, you know, we talk about guys you see that disappoint you that are supposed to be guys, and a lot of times on the exact same game, you'll find someone go, who is this guy? You know, Jalen Ortiz, I was like, yeah, this is not really anything there. And then Zach Warren comes out of the bullpen to pitch the ninth, and that was my first thought, who the heck is this? This is a good player, and I'm glad you mentioned him. As we've mentioned, the Phillies, they seem to have done some really good things on the pitching side, and I think at least they found another one. I'm glad to hear you thought so too.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked a lot before about the Phillies do a really good job with international pitching prospects in Latin America, and certainly, you know, a big part of that is their scouts, and, you know, Sal Agostinelli, Carlos Salas, Chelao Mendez, and they have a whole, Kobe Perez, who used to be there in the Orioles, just hired him as their new international scouting director. They've done a really good job finding a lot of pitching prospects in Latin America for really cheap prices, but a lot of the credit also, I think, has to go to, obviously, in addition to the players themselves, just their pitching development guys on the coordinators and their coaching staff, where you're seeing the results both, with these lower-level signings internationally, but also these later draft picks, like a Zach Warren or Kyle Doey, guys who, you know, were interesting guys, but were later-round picks who had a lot of red flags on them, and the Phillies are taking them and kind of fixing those red flags, and even their stuff is going up a tick once they get to the Phillies, and the Phillies are working with those guys. So I think their development program on the minor league side when it comes to pitchers is been a real big source of strength for the organization.
Absolutely. All right, Ben, well, thank you so much for putting together the Phillies list for us this year and coming on the podcast. It's a pleasure as always, and we appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to another BA Prospects podcast. For Ben Badler, I'm Kyle Glazer. We'll see you next time.